To order the Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, May 28th. We're about to kiss a whole other month goodbye here. We're in doing work session today on House Bill 5021, which is the operations bill for the Department of Higher Education. I'll open a work session on House Bill 5021. And Mr. Bender, could you get us oriented?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Today is the first of three work sessions that you have scheduled on the Department of Higher Education budget for this week. You're also scheduled to take up this budget again tomorrow, and then after a hiatus on Thursday, to take up the budget again on Friday. So this will be your first Friday meeting as a subcommittee. Let you know, on Friday, the subcommittee will be meeting in this room immediately following the full committee. The chair and I had talked about moving to another room, but these other rooms are not available after all. So we will meet here following the full committee meeting of Ways and Means on Friday morning. Those of you who are on that committee as well can just stick around, and otherwise please observe the monitors to see when the full committee adjourns. There are a number of issues to deal with in the Department of Higher Education budget, and I've spoken with the subcommittee chair to develop a work plan to assist the subcommittee in coming to a recommendation for the full committee on this particular budget. I'd like to start by pointing out some of the materials that I've distributed to you this morning that we'll be going through today. First of all, I've distributed, all of you should have probably under your daily agenda, a sheet that just lists some OUS staff and BAM staff names and titles. These are some people who may come up and assist you when you have questions for the department. I can't guarantee that all the people who come up will be on that list, and certainly not all the people on that list will necessarily be coming up. But this is just to remind you of some of the names and titles and responsibilities of people that you heard from during the public hearings and who may be called upon to provide additional information during this work session. The next item that I would ask you to refer to is this item that's on the buff-colored paper. And this is a work plan to deal with this particular budget, which again is for the operations of the Department of Higher Education. Let me please remind you that there is one other bill that you must pass this session to fully fund the Department of Higher Education, and that is the Capital Construction Bill, which is currently scheduled for not even next week, but the week after that. So there will be some time before you take up the capital construction bill. The reason why higher ed has two bills is the state constitution prevents you from approving capital projects, which is what the capital construction bill does, in the same bill where you are appropriating the operating funds, which is what this bill does. So that is why there are two separate bills, and for now, the subcommittee will be working on the operating bill, which is House Bill 5021. This list on the work plan outlines a number of tasks that the subcommittee needs to address before you are in a position to report this bill back to the full committee with a recommendation on the higher education budget. And as you can see on this particular list, we've indicated here what we expect, what the expectation is for the items that the subcommittee will deal with this week and items that the subcommittee will deal with at a future time. It's not the expectation that during this week you will report this bill back to the full committee. But if you look at this list, you'll see there are a number of items that we are hoping that the subcommittee will be able to complete and take action on this week. Then there are a number of additional items where they are identified as review. As you can see, the first one there on this list is co-chair budget reductions, fee remission policies, et cetera, where we hope to discuss or explain what these items are and the types or scope of decisions that you will have to make, but you will not be asked this week to vote on any of these issues. They would be postponed to some future date. So we'll be basically going down in order of the materials that I've distributed to you today. These materials cover everything through all of the complete items except the last one that says other budget notes. So today we should be able, if time permits, to go through everything on this list down through performance measure review. Tomorrow we would presumably continue with the other budget notes and go through all of the review items. In the LFO recommendations, you will note that we will be asking you or recommending for you to approve certain budget note language and certain statements of expectation to explain how you expect the department to execute the budget that you are approving for them. And what we would expect or hope is that as these budget notes are discussed in subcommittee, if the department has any particular concerns, they may be able to express them at the time, but that what you would do is choose or approve a particular budget note language and ask the department then to prepare a written response to the subcommittee as to their interpretation of what this budget note or expectation really means and how they intend to implement that. We would expect that to occur, this presentation to come back from the department on Friday. And that's why you're not scheduled to meet on Thursday. This will give the department time to formulate their responses. Then when you receive these responses, this will again allow you to review them and to see whether you have any concerns about how the department is intending to implement your budget directives. The reason why LFO is recommending this is the technical reason is this is the result of a recommendation by the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, but in more descriptive terms, it's because the higher ed budget is very complex and it is sometimes difficult we found in the past that it's difficult for the legislature to communicate its expectations to the department. There tends to be ambiguity in a lot of instances. We believe that this process is helpful both to the legislature and to the to the Oregon University system to assure that people understand what the expectations are and what the results of the budget implementation would be. So that is the process we hope you will feel comfortable with pursuing. If there aren't any questions about the process, I'll start going into some of the details. What I would like...
Are there any questions or comments about the process? What an agreeable bunch. This 3-day weekend.
We're all brain dead.
What I would like to do...
Not you, Chris.
Oh, I think I
have. Again, looking at this work plan sheet, is start off with a review of the OUS budget and how it is set up. It's been some time since you've looked at this budget. It's a complicated budget, and if I were you, I wouldn't be able to remember how the budget was set up. If you already know the stuff that I'm talking about, please speed me up. I don't want to take up your time if all of this is information that is just stuff that seems to be a waste of time.
I think we can trust the members of the committee that they give you the input that you need.
Sure, I know. To talk about how this particular budget is set up, I would like to refer you to another document that I've distributed this morning, which is a document that looks like this. It has a number of tables on it. It's not a very attractive document in appearance, but it outlines, and it probably is located right below House Bill 5027. It outlines the way that this particular budget is set up. And I'd like to take a few minutes to actually go through this in some detail, not to talk so much about the numbers themselves, but to talk about what is in those numbers and how the department uses its funds to operate. The budget of the Department of Higher Education, or the Oregon University System, is structured in 10 what we call program areas. The program area is the term that we use in state budgeting to define different activities that the agency undertakes. 9 of those program areas are discussed on this sheet, that are on this handout that I'm giving you here. The 10th program area, which is capital construction, again, we are not looking at that because that will be in another bill, House Bill 5028, that you'll be taking up the week after next. But this handout shows historically for the operating budget, that's everything except the capital construction, the amount of expenditures that were occurred in 99-01, that it, the 01-03 was adopted in the 2001 regular session, then 01-03, what remained for the department after 5 special session reductions and emergency board actions, and finally, the 2003-05 governor's recommended budget. In all cases, when I refer to the governor's budget or the governor's recommended budget, unless I refer elsewise, or unless I specify elsewise, I'm referring to the governor's balanced budget that was submitted to you at the beginning of the session, and not to his revised budget, which was submitted or proposed immediately after the co-chairs introduced their budget. The reason for this is mainly a technical reason, because the budget, the bill that you have is based on the governor's balanced budget. It reflects that. And any changes that you make in the form of amendments would be amendments to the balanced budget and not amendments to the revised budget. So unless I specify otherwise, please note that that's what the governor's recommended budget refers to. Below the actual table numbers, you'll see that I've added a row for state funds. State funds are defined to be general fund plus lottery fund. So it's the combination of funds from those two sources. These are the funds that the state provides, which generally are fungible in the sense that if you don't provide these funds to the OUS, you could provide them somewhere else. You could appropriate them to some other use. But these are the state funds. Below that is a row called limited funds. The limited funds, it will always be larger, or at least as large as the state funds number, because they include the state funds plus what we've shown here as the other funds subject to limitation. So in this top table, the limited funds are the sum of the first 3 rows, general fund, lottery fund, and other funds. The reason why I'm displaying the information in this way is because this, I believe, is the most useful way to look at the ability of, or the funding of the entire system and its ability to provide services and to support its costs. It's not so much the case when we look at the operating budget as a total here, but as we start looking at the components that sum up, the program areas that sum up to that, in almost all cases, the state funds and the other funds that are limited are combined together and together used to finance certain costs, whereas the non-limited funds in the budgets are used to support a different set of costs. This is quite unusual. There aren't too many instances in state government where state general fund plus fee monies, which is basically what these other funds are. They're generally fees, not exclusively, but generally from fees and charges. It's pretty unusual that these two sources are combined to support the same program in state government. Typically, we have state-supported programs and fee-supported programs, and they're a little different. But in this budget, these funding sources are combined, and that's why I'm showing them this way. If we could look at the Education in General program, which is on the bottom of page 1, this is by far the largest program in higher education, and this is what most people think of when they think of what higher education does. It represents almost all of the instructional research and public service activities of the seven campuses, and also those activities of the Chancellor's Office and other programs that are centrally funded. The state funds, again, in this case, are all general fund. There are no lottery fund dollars that go in to support the education and general program. So the state funds row, if you look, is the same as the general funds row. The limited funds adds to these general fund the other funds that are limited. That number, for example, in the governor's budget, if you look in the right-hand column, is a little over $850 million. What the limited funds are they are primarily, but not totally, tuition and student fees. There are also other sources of revenues in other funds, limited, that would include indirect cost recoveries. These are monies that, under federal grant programs, are permitted to be used to support the operations of the institution, to support institutional costs that are incurred because research is going on at the institutions. And there are other elements in there, such as there are certain sales and services, et cetera. But to look at this as primarily fee-driven is not inaccurate. It's primarily the funds that come from tuition, resource fees, and other student fees, such as fees for application, you know, application fees, matriculation fees. All of these types of fees are going in the system. When you look at the limited funds then, since these funds are combined, this is the funding that's available for these programs. When you look at the state funds, these are the funds that the state is providing to reduce the costs to students. Otherwise, if everything were totally fee-supported, the tuition rates would be extremely high. The state adds general fund to help bring these tuition rates down, to increase accessibility, and also to expand programs, to allow program delivery to be greater than it would otherwise be. If you look, for example, at the governor's recommended budget, this is the rightmost column under ENG, under state funds, you'll see that for education in general, the balanced budget included a bit over $649 million in state in general fund, and that this number was, if you go down, 6.5% less than what the legislature approved last session in 2001. So this is an actual decline. This isn't adjusted for inflation or anything like that. This is an actual dollar decline. This number is 3.9% higher than what higher ed had during the current biennium after all the special session cuts were made. So you can see that this is a budget that is tight in terms of general fund support for higher ed. It's an actual decline. If you look at the limited funds, that is to say the combination of what higher ed is receiving from general fund plus from the fee and tuition revenues and these other sources that aren't quite as big but which are used to pay the costs to higher ed, you can see that the total is a bit over $1,469 million, and that number is 8% greater than what was approved in the 2001 regular session, and 8.8% greater than what was available after the budget cuts in the five special sessions. So in this sense, you can see that the funding situation is not as grim in terms of supporting programs as it would appear just looking at the state funds alone. Of course, in order to achieve this increase, we're looking at tuition rate increases. So one of the items that we have listed on the review, which we'll get into more detail into tomorrow, is to look at this issue of tuition support and the relationship more directly between state funds and tuition dollars. One of the items on this list, for example, talks about potential general fund adjustments relating to tuition policies. It may be the case that when you look at tuition dollars, you may want to adjust the state general fund amount based on the total amount that would be generated. The Senate, for example, came out with a proposal, or made a proposal last week, to essentially buy off the tuition rate increases that are proposed by the institutions in the 03-05 biennium. And what this situation would be is if the legislature adopted something like this, you would essentially add to the state funds a certain amount, take out from the limit from the other funds an equal amount, that would be the amount that would have been generated by the tuition dollar increases, and the funding would stay the same, but the tuition rates would then be lower. They would be frozen to students. On the other hand, you could end up going the other way, and you may find that you're unable to supply general fund at levels that you think will allow the system to operate, and you may then choose to offset by an adjustment in other funds in the other direction by allowing greater tuition increases than is allowed in the budget. I will tell you that LFO is not in a situation yet to make a recommendation to you on tuition rate increases or the other funds limitation that you would that would imply, because the budget that comes to you from the governor would need an adjustment just to allow expenditures of the tuition rates that are currently set. Even without looking at the proposed increases in 03-05, the limitation here in the governor's budget would essentially have institutions being unable to spend the tuition that they will collect at the rates that they're currently charging.
So the tuition, the expenditure limitation is too low to accommodate the current tuition.
Yes. So we will be looking, I'm still looking at telling you, giving you a recommendation of what you would have to do to this expenditure limitation if you wanted to assure that the revenues that are expected to be generated from the tuition rates could be spent. And then at that point, you can start looking at if there are different tuition rate increases beyond what have already been, or I'm sorry, if their tuition changes beyond what is currently being, the rates that are currently being charged, how that would affect what you would have to do to this budget.
So might the committee make the assumption, Mr. Bender, that you currently have the information and that you're in the process of working with it?
I believe I have the information that I need. I am looking at that. It may turn out that some questions occur, and I may have to ask for further information from the department. But as of now, I'm not aware of anything else that I have to ask them for.
Thank you.
But again, these types of decisions, you will not be asked to make decisions on things such as tuition rates, other funds limitation, or general fund amounts this week. I'd like to speed things up a little bit, but I would still like to continue in this handout that I've been talking to you about. The next program area in the higher ed budget is for fee remissions. Fee remissions are reductions in the tuition and fees that are charged to students under various programs. If you look at these numbers, probably the first thing you'll notice is they look very strange because they were zero in 99-01, then there are numbers there in 01-03, and then they're back to zero again in 03-05. What is going on here is not that there were only fee remissions in that one biennium. What's actually going on here are changes in the way that fee remissions are being handled in the budget, and the reason why these are being changed is to conform with higher education accounting standards, which have been changing over time. It's unfortunate that this makes the budget not as neat, but we believe it is important that the expenditures in the budget track what higher ed would account as expenditures under their accounting standards. what happened in 1999-01 is that fee remissions were considered reductions in revenues. The legislature, when you approve a budget, you don't technically approve the revenues. You more specifically approve what can be spent. That's what you're approving in the bill, what can be spent. So there was no need, when fee remissions weren't considered to be money that was being spent, to even address them in your bill. But that changed. In 2001, the accounting standards were changed, and fee remissions were considered actual expenditures, and they were not considered to be reductions in revenues. So last session, in 2001, your budget bill indicated how much could be spent in fee remissions, because the budget controls expenditures. Now things are changing again in 2003-2005. To conform to accounting standards now, fee remissions are being treated in two ways. The fee remissions that go to graduate students, that are paid to graduate students, typically in exchange for services as teaching assistants or as research assistants, is being considered, continue to be considered an expenditure, but we are showing it in the education in general expenditure in the program and not in fee remissions anymore. The reason for this is these are costs. I mean, these are compensation costs, or considered to be compensation costs to graduate students. And like other compensation costs for teaching faculty or for support staff, we show them in the education in general program and not in fee remissions anymore. The other set of fee remissions, which go not exclusively to undergraduates, but to undergraduates and graduate students, but they're not in exchange for actual compensation for work done, but they are reductions in charges in order to attract students or manage enrollment or to provide financial aid for lower income students, those are again being accounted for as reductions in revenue. So they don't show up either. So there's no need, the fee remission program won't be included in the 2003-2005 budget anymore. We're just now showing it for historic purposes, but there still will be fee remissions. I think you're all aware that the co-chairs have in their budget a provision about fee remissions, which we will discuss tomorrow in more detail. But this is how, this is the various changes that have been shown in fee remissions.
Mr. Bender, all of us are aware that fee remissions are going to be one of the most hotly debated items in the higher ed budget. And I'm wondering what provision that LFO and the Chancellor's Office is making to present the committee members with some historical information about where the program has been and what it's expected to be in the 2003-2005 biennium.
I have received a great deal of information on this subject from this system, and we'll be including that in materials for you tomorrow.
Senator Mazzarri.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is an area of great interest to me, and I think others, and particularly when you combine that with what we're learning about the RAM process in the colleges. And I'm just, it seems to me that this would be an appropriate time for me to mention that I'd be interested in the percentage of fee remissions per university, per campus, as well as the different categories that these fees are being remitted for, and to try to get a sense of how this is being applied, because as I understand it, it's up to the individual university to decide how many and how much or how they use the fee remission. Is that not true?
That's generally true, yes.
Senator Mazzarri, I would concur, and what I'd also like to see is some historical information by campus going back some point in time so that we can see whether the extent to which this is growing in relation to the total tuition dollars. Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, you're right. This is going to be something we're going to have to discuss, and I expect that discussion to occur. I would like to have a little more information, too, brought to the committee. I know that about half the fever emissions, I think, are being used for medically needed. Wrong committee, and that just came off a long weekend on call.
We understand.
And VRs were jammed up with medically needy people, by the way, because they haven't got their organ health plan anymore. Anyway, about half the remissions are aimed at economic needy students, and we wanted to get a figure on that of how many of those were actually from Oregon, and we wanted to get something about their ethnicity. The other ones were primarily being used to recruit students of higher academic standards and from out of state and out of country, and there's sort of a race to the bottom going on there where you remit some of their higher tuition, their out-of-state tuition, in order to get them in, and they actually fund other students. But we wanted to see those figures a little more closely. It was not a situation, of my understanding, I want that fleshed out, where it was we're giving a complete fee remission or tuition remission for students. It was more of something that to compete with other universities were doing it. And I'd like to have that discussed in front of the committee also. I think it would be much more meaningful for us when we see that. Mm-hmm. And breaking it down by university, I think, would be excellent.
Yes.
That's a good idea. I haven't seen those figures yet.
Representative March.
Yeah, while we're on that, is there any information available? For example, I know some universities use it to when they're attracting out-of-state students, they will give them a reduction on the out-of-state tuition, but that actually generates tuition dollars. So is there kind of a what percentage of them are full ride scholarships? What are partial? What generate money? I don't know if that information is available, but I know some of them actually do generate fees that if they didn't reduce the tuition, the student wouldn't be there, we wouldn't get the tuition.
And I see Mr. Bender taking copious notes and numerous people sitting out in the front row there taking notes. So any other requests for data while we're on this subject? Thank you. Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
Going back to page 2 of this budget structure, the next budget structure that has state support dollars is the debt service budget structure, the debt service program area. Debt service is payments for bonds that were issued prior to the current biennium and that are now outstanding. The general fund number supports debt service on Article 11G bonds that were issued to support higher ed capital construction projects. The lottery funds, which is a new item beginning in the 01-03 biennium, supports debt service on lottery bonds that were issued to construct higher ed capital construction projects. And the non-limited number is basically or primarily the debt service on Article 11 F1 bonds, which the campuses must pay out of their various operating funds, and generally these are auxiliary activities such as housing, dining, student services. But these funds you do not limit. These expenditures you do not limit. You allow them to spend what is necessary to meet the debt service, and these are estimates of what those amounts will be. The next three program areas.
I'm sorry. I need some of you ready to move on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Way back when we went through these bonding issues, I had decided to drill down on one project to get a feel for what was going on. I asked for information about the new center at the medical center at the University of Oregon. I've asked for that three times now. I've not received any information on it yet.
I will double check. I think I know I've received that. I think I've distributed that, but I'll double check.
Maybe I missed it. Okay. I actually wanted to have a discussion about it.
You have a head nodding up and down back there, so indicating that we have received the information.
Yes. This would.
I was hoping for actually an open discussion, but I'll meet with you afterwards.
This would also probably be specifically more germane to the capital construction bill, where the projects are actually approved at the costs that we expect those projects to incur. This, again, is the debt service on projects on bonds that have already been issued. And you'll see we have a recommendation. The governor's recommended budget, we require more general fund to actually pay the debt service on these bonds than is in the budget, and that's an adjustment we're going to be recommending. These are for bonds that are already issued, and the debt service is out there and has to be paid.
These are impossible areas to do much with.
Yeah, actually it is. Since this is typically looking back on bonds that have already been issued, the way to the legislature essentially acts to control these costs is in the capital construction project when you approve new bonds to be issued that will incur future debt service. The next three program areas.
Before we move on, are there any more questions on debt service for Mr. Bender?
Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon.
I'm going to want to go back to fee remissions, but we can do that.
Okay.
You want to do that now?
Please.
Okay. I'm reviewing some information that we already received in a packet. Their responses to questions raised during our previous hearings. It's a packet dated April 29th. And I was just looking back at some of my notes after reading through the packet. Some of the information we're requesting today is in the packet. The data around race and ethnicity, but some of the other information, out-of-state remissions, that isn't there. The other thing that's missing is this data covers the year 2000 and 2001, but we don't have data for 2002. So as you're putting together that expanded response for us, if you could include 2002 data, that would be most helpful.
Senator Gordy, I would like to also go back one biennium, too, so that we can kind of get a larger look at the trending.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's it for now, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Bender, please proceed.
In the three statewide public service programs, the basic budget, the way the budgets function within these programs, all of these are housed at Oregon State University, and all of them are separate line items in the budget, which means that the system cannot transfer funds between these particular programs and any other programs. In these cases as well, general fund and other funds in each of these three programs are typically combined and are used to support the operating costs of the programs, whereas the non-limited funds, as they were in the education and general program area, are primarily gifts, grants, and contracts, you know, research contracts, that we allow the institutions to spend without limitation. So in that sense, the basic structure is similar in to how the education and general program is financed. The main difference is that the other funds in these cases for these three statewide public services do not include any tuition funds. There are no tuition revenues in these particular programs. Instead, the other funds come from a number of sources, primarily other government sources, for example, federal government support that's distributed on a formula basis as opposed to on a competitive research grant basis is considered a limited other funds, and those monies are combined with the general fund to support the operations. For the extension service, there are also county government funds that come into play. These funds are not completely fungible with the state general fund. They're more restricted in how they can be used. Obviously, they have to stay in the county that's providing them. The counties are not providing funds to support operations in the other counties. But together with the general fund, these support the extension service. And again, the non-limited would be the gifts, grants, and contracts. And the same for the Forest Research Laboratory, where the other funds, in this case, consist of federal funds again, as well as receipts from the state's forest products harvest tax. Also, help to support the Forest Research Laboratory and other funds. And again, I would argue you could look at, if you would look at the impact of the governor's recommended budget, you can compare the impacts on state funds, percentage changes, and limited funds to see, looking at limited funds, you would get a better understanding of how the overall budgets are able to operate in total funding.
questions or comments on the state rides? Mr. Bender, please proceed.
We're almost done. We've discussed all the areas of the budget where the state provides general fund support for higher education, but there are a number of other areas in this budget that do not receive state general fund. The next item area is the Sports Action Lottery Program area. These are funds that, this is a dedicated fund source from Sports Action Lottery games. All of the proceeds from these games are by law dedicated to higher ed, and there they are used to support intercollegiate athletic programs as well as graduate student scholarships. And what we do in the budget here is we essentially allow all of the funds to be spent. So we establish an expenditure limitation for this program equal to what we expect the receipts of monies to be. And you can see in the governor's recommended budget, there's an expectation that this will decline from 0103, and that's simply what's happening with this game. I mean, there's no other source of funding for this particular program area.
Questions on the Sports Action Lottery or comments? Please proceed, Mr. Bender.
And finally, the last two program areas in the operating budget are, first of all, the Other Services Non-Limited Program. None of these funds are state-supported in terms of general or lottery funds, and indeed, none of the funds are even limited by the legislature. So you do not tell higher ed how much they can spend in these programs. We put the dollars in here simply to show what the expenditures are projected to be and what we are expecting to be spent in these areas. So what are these areas where the legislature is essentially telling higher ed, these are all other funds, you can spend however many dollars you need to for these specific programs. What we are looking at here include the auxiliary activities of higher ed. So these would be programs that operate on a self-support basis, such as housing services, student health services, student government services, parking, dining, these types of activities, which generate funds and are spent without limitation in the budget. And you can see a substantial number of employees are supported by these funds, in addition to services and supplies costs. We're just showing the number of employees there.
So, Mr. Bender, this would also be the revenue source for non-limited debt service?
Non-limited debt service is separate and is shown.
But this would be where the money comes from to pay for bonds that cover.
That is
housing,
correct.
Dining, parking,
that is
all
correct.
Those kinds of things.
So what you see in the Other Services Non-Limited Program would be what would be left after paying those debt service costs. Debt service costs are taken out and shown separately.
Okay, so this is the revenue counted. That remains after the debt service is paid.
It is?
Thank you.
Yes.
Representative Smith?
This is the money, the $580 million. Is what is left after all debt is paid.
Yes, essentially that's correct.
That's not where it's spent against the services you just talked about.
Oh, yeah.
Is it primarily from student fees?
Primarily these are from fees and from charges for services. So sources of money for these types of things would include some of these would be mandatory fees, such as when you enroll at an institution, you generally have to pay a student health fee, which would support the student health services program. You generally, or you always would have to pay some type of incidental fee, which would support student services that are funded from that fee, including services of the student governments. There are other fees that not all students would have to pay. If you live in a residence hall, the fees that you pay, the residence fees, would also be shown here. If you're at a dining program, what you're paying for your dining plan would be shown here. If you're not in a dining plan, but the you know, the dining service is open to people who aren't in the plan, and you just pay a certain, you know, amount for a meal, those dollars would be shown in here. What you would pay on parking fees would be shown. So this is all of these activities that are operated on an auxiliary basis.
Representative March.
Yeah, I just want to back up to the sports action lottery for a second. What, the 4.7, yeah, let's bet on this one. In 99, we were 4.5. It looks like our legislative adopted and approved was 5.4. Was that just an overly optimistic estimate, and did it ever approach 5.4, did the revenue there, or were we just kind of overly optimistic at that point? And I'll bet the latter.
I have that information, but I don't have it right here, and I'll get that for
okay.
you tomorrow. I apologize.
Yeah.
I think it was higher than expected, and this isn't as much of a drop as it would appear.
Right.
The growth that was expected
wasn't as
probably didn't occur. But
right.
I will get that number as
okay.
what the actual estimated receipts were.
Thanks.
Okay, any more questions on other services? So just to kind of tie other services together, then the 580.6 million that's in here cover the operating expenses of the facilities, basically.
Yes, of all those auxiliary activities.
Okay, let's talk about services and clearing.
Services and clearing department is basically an entry that captures expenditures that are billed by one department in higher ed to another department. So very often these are within the same campus, and these are expenditures, for example, there may be campus may have a printer or a printing service, and if a particular department in the university wants to get something printed at that printer, there will be a certain cost involved. And now those expenditures would show up here in the services and clearing department. We show these so that these types of expenditures or fees support a number of employees that work in these types of departments. This particular program area, where everything is non-limited because these aren't extra funds, these are just funds that are being transferred from one department to another within the system. This shows how much of that activity is going on and what the support of positions and FTE is from that activity. The reason why it was zero before this is we have done some changes in how this is being accounted for to adjust to the new ORBITS system that the state is now using to track budgets. And before, we hadn't actually shown these expenditures. They were included in the other program areas. But now the expenditures are also being taken out and shown alongside the FTE.
Senator Mazzoni.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How is this information useful to us? We don't know whether it's good, bad, indifferent, or what.
Frankly, it's probably not all that useful. I think it's helpful to have it provides additional information that you didn't have before to show the extent to which these types of expenditures are occurring, and to help explain why employment in the system is at the level that it is. These are the employees, you know, the 305 are roughly the number of employees that are being funded from these types of transfer activities. But you will note that all of these funds are non-limited in the budget, which means they don't show up in your budget bill at all. And typically, I don't think these would be something that would be of concern to you as a legislature. And if campuses change their internal billing processes, this number could change substantially, even though the total activity that was going on wouldn't have changed.
Any more questions or comments on services and clearing? Mr. Bender.
Madam Chair.
Oh, Representative Mark.
I just was going back, and I know in most departments we've kind of held down the growth in the FTE. And I just noticed Extension Service has a growth of about 50 FTE.
Yes, we'll be talking more there. It'll turn out that we're recommending a reduction in the Extension Service in the number, in the amount of funding and in FTE, because some of the other funds that are listed there, we now know are not going to actually accrue to the Extension Service, and they will be reducing their expenditures in response. But yes, we will. I did want to talk. One of the items that I'd like to get to today, if we do have time, is just to talk about positions in general in higher ed and how they are funded differently in many respects than they are in for other state agencies.
Now let's keep moving down the list here.
Okay.
Having finished the first thing on the list. Oh, wait a minute. Representative Bates has
a
question.
Well, Representative Moore brought up an important concept that I think all the committees and ways we're going to have to deal with as we go through. And that's the question of FTEs and mission for the group you're looking at. The agricultural experiment stations are programs of counties that are very important. And that may not be real apparent to people from big cities, but for those of us in the counties, they have extremely important programs. If they can bring in other funds or non-limited funds to fill the holes in general fund and maintain those programs or expand them, then that's a question we have to answer ourselves here. Just mm-hmm. as in the nursing budget we're looking at on another committee, we have to ask ourselves, are we going to hold the line in FTEs just based on that's what we're trying to tell people to do because we're trying to live within our means as much as we can. I think we have to look at each one of these budgets separately and think carefully about them before we make a decision just based on this is our overall plan. I would agree with that overall plan for the most part, but I think we have to really make exceptions. And I would tell the Agriculture Experiment Station is one of those ones I look at. If they can bring the money in from other sources other than from us, I would think twice about that. And if they have a mission complete, and they're completing that mission, and they can't complete without the extra FTE, then I would consider looking at it very carefully before making any decision, just saying no. Okay?
Thank you. Mr. Bender.
I'd like to continue, if I may, and go on to technical adjustments in the budget that we are recommending. And if I may refer you to this handout, which is dated with today's date and titled LFO Recommendation, Department of Higher Ed Operating Budget, House Bill 5021, Part 1. You'll be getting Part 2 tomorrow. This runs through, basically in the order on this work plan, a number of recommendations that we would make to you as the subcommittee working on this budget. And the first set is a number of technical adjustments. Specifically, the governor, when he made his presentation to the subcommittee, so this was before the revised budget came out, but when BAM made the presentation of the governor's budget to the subcommittee, they noted two technical corrections. One of these is not germane to this bill because it relates to capital construction, but the second one is, and LFO would recommend that you make this adjustment. What I'm looking at is the first paragraph here under number one, and starting about six lines from the bottom, where it says the other adjustment is germane. What we would recommend is that you approve a technical adjustment, which is to approve a package 070 revenue shortfalls in the Extension Service program area to reduce other funds by $2.5 million for personal services, and to eliminate 34 positions and the equivalent of 32.81 FTE. The reason why this package was brought forward as a technical adjustment and why it's considered just technical, and the reason why we are supporting it, is it has been discovered since the budget was put together that the revenues that we thought were available to the Extension Service are not indeed available, and that they will need to make this reduction in expenditures just to align with their revenues, their actual amount of revenue. So it's not as if we're asking you to make a reduction in a policy sense of saying you know, they're too big or whatever. We don't want them to do this. We're just trying to get their expenditures in line with their actual revenues. And that's why we would recommend that you adopt this.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. For clarification, then, we're talking about eliminating existing positions.
These are positions that are in the budget, yes.
And what are those positions, and what impact are we looking at?
I am unable to provide that detail. I'm sorry. I don't know if there's anyone here who can or not.
Let me clarify that question.
Representative March.
They're existing in the proposed budget, but they're not existing in the current budget.
Thank you.
Is that correct?
I believe, actually, that these positions do exist in the existing budget. I do not know to what extent they are, any of them are vacant already. And
so
let me try to get, you know, if you'd like more information on that before you take a motion, I will try to get some more.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
You said the funding is no longer there or something like that. There's not funding.
Yes.
Why? What happened to the funding?
The funding source, when the budget was put together, it was believed that there were more sources of funds in other funds, which would typically be federal support dollars, than actually the Extension Service is expected to receive based on federal appropriation levels. And what actually happened is the budget, they looked at what the expenditure patterns had been in the past without realizing that some of these expenditures were being supported by reductions in fund balances and not by ongoing revenue streams, and that therefore the expenditure levels that were in the governor's recommended budget could not actually be supported by the amount of revenue that will be available to the Extension Service in 03-05.
Representative Smith is still looking somewhat puzzled on this, and my understanding is that there was a surplus that had built up in their federal funds accounts. And there was an assumption that was made that this was an ongoing revenue source rather than a buildup in surplus. And so it was drawn down from the point of view of it being an ongoing revenue source, which it actually wasn't. I'm wondering, Mr. Bender, if the committee would benefit from having a presentation on the issues that led up to this action having to be taken on the Extension Service budget, and the work that the Extension Service has done in going out to the stakeholders and the counties and working out a solution to it.
Certainly.
Madam Chair.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very supportive of the Extension Program. Very important to my district. But I am absolutely dumbfounded, I guess, for lack of a better word, as to why this situation wasn't picked up a long time before now. I think this has been going on for several years, and why no one throughout the process, from the Oregon State University to the higher education or anyone, has picked up that this was on a crash course. If possible, I would like an explanation of that.
I think that's a very good question, and I think the other piece of that that needs to be talked about is what the system has done so that this doesn't occur in the future.
Yeah, and I still want to find out, are we subtracting this from 450, or are we subtracting it from 503? What's the current FTE? You know.
Representative Marsh and members, if you go back to the tables that we were looking at earlier, on page 3, you can see that the actual subtraction would be from the 503, so that even after the subtraction, the FTE level would still be higher than the 450.
It'd be 470.
Yeah.
So then these aren't existing positions. These are projected positions.
I think I need to get
clarification
for you.
I think this is an issue that we've been working, legislative, fiscal, and myself have been working with OSU and the Extension Service on. And I think that in terms of the discussion that's going to be had in the legislative process, that to get the committee members grounded in this issue would be very beneficial. So I would ask you, Mr. Bender, to add that to the issues that we'll deal with tomorrow, if there is time to put it together in that short order.
Well, let's move on then to a second technical adjustment that LFL is recommending. This is a technical adjustment to reflect a change that occurred when the May 2003 revenue forecast was issued a few weeks ago. And that is, there were more funds anticipated for the sports action lottery program than was previously projected when the governor's recommended budget was put together. That amount has increased by $189,000. So if you look at the bottom of page one, that paragraph, which continues on to the top of page two, we recommend that you increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation in the sports action lottery program by $189,000 to allow all projected revenue to be spent. This would maintain what the governor's budget did with the best available information at its time, just updating that information.
So is there any questions or comments on this suggested technical adjustment? Is there any objections to it? The chair would accept a motion to increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation in the sports action lottery program area by $189,000.
So moved.
Senator Gordley's made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Thank you. I note also, this is not really a technical adjustment because the legislature in this particular action, as you work on House Bill 5021, you're not taking actions to identify revenue amounts. You're looking at instead approving expenditures. But I would like to let you know that we're requesting you to acknowledge that LFO will be working with the Department of Administrative Services to correct and update fund balance amounts and revenues in the department's budget. We have additional information, and we'll continue to get it, as to the amounts of that exist in various funds in the department budget. And we wish to let you know and to have you understand that we will be making these adjustments to make these more accurate. None of these adjustments that we would make would affect the appropriations or expenditure limitations that you are approving. It's simply, this is a process that we usually go through, but in this case, it may be more extensive than it has been at some other times. In terms of fund balances, as you know, subcommittees have been asked to look at fund balances and to see the effects that they may have on expenditure limitations that you approve, et cetera. LFO is not ready to give you a recommendation at this time on the fund balance information, but we just are asking you to understand that we will be making adjustments to make the data more accurate and then bring to your attention any recommendations that this new data may flow through in terms of expenditures that you recommend.
So, Mr. Bender, am I correct in assuming that there are aspects of this that are a function of the OUS system having a discrete accounting system that's separate from the state's accounting system, and that what this is a process of reconciling what both of those systems have in them in terms of numbers in those ending balances?
I would characterize it that way. I don't.
And would it be also fair to characterize the balances in the different accounting systems as very different, that there are real different numbers in OUS's system than the state of Oregon's system?
Well, I'm still looking at this information. In fact, I have a meeting right after this meeting to help me with the materials that I've received. So I will let you know.
Thank you. The ending fund balances and the cash flow needs of these funds are something that the co-chairs have instructed the subcommittee chairs to look at very closely. And this has a kind of an extra wrinkle in it because we've got two whole different accounting systems that don't talk to each other. And all of this has to be hand reconciled and is somewhat complex, but I will trust that Mr. Bender will get the information that he needs from the system and that the questions will all be answered, because I think that it is important to make sure that both of the bookkeeping systems work together, that there is the same kind of information in both systems. And we'll also be dealing with budget notes that try to move that issue further along, too. So I think that what I'd like to do is just have the record reflect that this is a very important issue to this process and that we fully expect a timely and adequate resolution to it so that the members of the committee have a clear understanding of what the real number is and how it was arrived at, how the two systems were reconciled. Questions or comments?
No.
Mr. Bender.
The next two items on this memo, items 2 and 3, refer to adjustments we are recommending due to changes in state government service charges. There are two of these. DAS assessments are being reduced as a result of changes that were adopted in the DAS budget, agency budget. As these costs are reduced, the need for funds in OUS to pay them is similarly reduced. LFO recommends that the subcommittee reduce the general fund appropriation in the education and general program area by $644,689 to eliminate unneeded funding for payment of DAS assessments. This is the dollar amount that these assessments will decline from the levels that were in the governor's budget. So it's a dollar-for-dollar reduction in costs and funding to them.
Is there any discussion on the LFO recommendation with the DAS assessments? Are there any objections to this? Chair would accept a motion to reduce the general fund appropriation in the education and general program area by $644,689.
So moved.
Representative Smith has moved. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Item 3 is a parallel situation with a reduction in the Attorney General hourly rate as a result of adjustments approved or being worked on in the Department of Justice agency budget. The hourly charge for the Attorney General is being reduced by 10.1% from the level that was assumed in developing the governor's balanced budget proposal. This is projected to reduce costs to OUS by $280,928, and we recommend that you reduce the general fund appropriation and ENG program by this amount to reflect that cost reduction.
Is there any questions on LFO's recommendation to adjusting the Attorney General charges? Is there any objection to this? Chair would accept a motion to reduce the general fund appropriation in the education and general program area by $280,928.
So moved.
Senator Gordley has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Item 4 deals with the elimination of funds that have been included in this agency budget to offset the impact of inflation on service and supply costs. The co-chairs have directed that the state, that their budget cannot support funding to offset inflation in service and supply costs due to the fiscal situation that the state is facing, and that all such funding in agency budgets be removed. What LFO did was we identified the funding that remains in the Department of Higher Education's budget for to offset inflationary costs, and to conform with the co-chair's directive, We recommend that you reduce agency expenditures by a total of $11,387,090, as shown in the table on the bottom of page 2 by fund type and program area, to eliminate funds in the governor's balanced budget that were there to offset the impact of inflation on service and supply costs. If there are any questions about this, I'd be happy to respond.
Madam Chair.
Senator Mazzoli.
Could Mr. Bender tell us what the abbreviations are here?
Certainly. I do apologize for that. In the column, ENG is in the Education and General Program. There was an amount of for inflation totaling $10.5 million in that program, and we're recommending removing that. The general fund component was about $4.9 million. And the other fund's limited component was about $5.6 million. The next program area is the Agricultural Experiment Station. Then ES stands for the Extension Service, and FRL stands for the Forest Research Laboratory. These are all of the program areas that had inflation funding in them in the operating budget in the governor's balance.
Madam Chair.
Follow up.
I could follow up. There are costs that are going up that they have no control over. Is that not been included in this reduction then?
Your comment is correct. There are costs that are going up that they do not have control over. And funding that had been supplied in the budget to help address those cost increases, under recommendation 4, you would be taking that funding out, and the agency would have to manage these, you know, with less funding to presumably make reductions in services and supply expenditures because they don't have the funding to address the increase in inflationary costs. This, however, is a component of the co-chair's budget, and they are requesting this in all agency budgets, and this is the applicable, this is how this type of directive would accurately be applied to this particular budget.
Follow up?
Another follow up, Madam Chair. If I'm not mistaken, in other budgets we've dealt with, though, we did allow for some of those costs that they have absolutely no control over, not in,
oh,
in education. And why are we treating, I think we're treating this one differently than we have some of the other ones?
I do apologize, Senator. I think I now have a better understanding of what you were referring to when you were talking about costs they had no control over. This would be, for example, I suspect that in other agency budgets, if you are aware of a particular rent, you know, if they were renting a space and that cost was going up and you knew that that was what the lease payments would be and it was cheaper than them finding an alternative, you made adjustments for that. It is true that there are no similar types of exceptions here in the higher education, in these reduction amounts. We do not take any particular cost increases that we are aware of in that manner. We're not aware of specific cases like that, and do believe that for the Department of Higher Education budget, because of the size of the budget, this reduction in some of the smaller agencies, you know, so much of their budget may be going to rent, that if you don't allow that, they really couldn't function. This is a larger budget, and we believe that this type of reduction probably would accurately reflect what the co-chairs are directing.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Ma'am, Chair, along the same lines, Senator Messley is covered some of the ground I was going to ask questions on. When you're looking at a large budget like this, I don't think you can actually trace down through it these kind of reductions and see if they're appropriate or not. You're asking the agency, in this case, Oregon Higher Education, to do this for you. But I'm also concerned that this isn't real and that you're actually talking about a cost shift here. You're going to these savings probably can't be made within the system because they're not reality. And as a result, you're going to see either higher tuition or you're going to start capping students in the system because the tuition either by going up eliminates students coming in, or the universities say, we can't produce that product for that price. You have a quality problem. So as we look at this, if we agree to this reduction, we should think to ourselves, I believe, that this really is a cost shift. They're not going to actually be able to do these things, probably, and that's going to have to come out of some other part of the budget, and we have to realize that. The other alternative, of course, is to refund the budgets to a point they can take care of these problems. But I understand what the co-chair is trying to do, what you're trying to do, with a huge budget like this, and we're going to see other ones, they're just as big. You're not going to be able to track those down to individual buildings and places and things. So let's be aware of what we're doing, but if we need to do it, we'll go ahead and do it. It's a reduction in their budget, and we may have to do that.
Mr. Bender, could you give us what percentage of a reduction this is in the total budget?
Well, in their service and supply budget, that is another question. What does this leave?
The amount that was allowed, the original numbers that were in the budget for services and supplies, was, Mr. McGee, do you remember what the factor was offhand? It was 3.5% of services and supply costs that were in the base budget were added. So essentially, this reduction should be close to 3.5% services and supply costs.
And we have affirmative nods from the Oregon University system. So that is the perspective there on the depth of these cuts. These are just inflationary rollbacks. And these are something that we will be applying to all budgets.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
If we could ask the department if they wish to comment on this reduction, if they have a perspective they'd like to share. If not, that's fine. But
Mr. Jarvis, did you have anyone that you wanted to have?
Tom Andrews, Senior Vice Chancellor for Finance. Just quickly.
Good morning.
Good morning. The basic impact will be that we'll look at that $5 million or $5.5 million in conjunction with the other reductions. And, I mean, when you look at the co-chairs, you're looking at a reduction of about $73 million. I think to Representative Bates' view, it will be another reduction that we'll end up looking at running through the model, if you will, and having to make judgments about how that would be allocated to each of the campuses. The way it works right now, because you have such a predominant amount of the funding that goes toward instruction for graduate and undergraduate, it's inevitable that some portion of that would be going into those areas.
So are you saying, Mr. Andrews, then, when you budget that what you budget for services and supplies isn't necessarily spent on services and supplies?
Madam Chair, no. I think that's each of the campuses, when they get a final allocation, what we do is we'll say to the campus, based on funding that runs through the model, and I know that's kind of a difficult term to define, but they will receive a dollar that gives them the opportunity to allocate or reallocate. They will have an overall reduction of 8, 10, 11%. They can go back and look at their budget, and they can say, yeah, I may even take more out of services and supplies than I had in prior years, but or that was in the budget. But what will likely happen is, because the services and supplies is relatively low now, that the recourse is to go back to the undergraduate and graduate instructional areas and identify funding in those areas, simply because the margins that we've got in services and supplies is very, very low already. But it will vary by each campus. I mean, what I think Mr. Bender is speaking to is a kind of an overall system-wide number, but how Southern reacts to it versus, say, Western may differ.
Representative March.
Thank you. And we're also offsetting other fund by 5.9. And how will that translate through?
Madam Chair and Representative March, it would be the same thing. You're looking at other funds are essentially your tuition and your fees. You're going to be looking at a comparable amount of funds on the tuition and fee side and the same kind of decision-making process.
So one way or the other, it's $11 million cut.
Correct.
Thanks.
Any further questions?
Thank you. The I would just like to state to the committee that these are the standard inflationary rollbacks in services and supplies that the co-chairs have instructed us to apply to all budgets. And this budget, I think, and a number of the ones that we'll be working with in the education arena don't have a lot of specificity to them in terms of how the money actually gets spent in accordance with the our ability to instruct the agency. But I think that it is very critical for the process to be even-handed in how these issues are addressed across all the budgeting areas. And the a particular interest here is the other fund's limitation, because there really is nothing to hold the system's feet to the fire in taking a 3% other funds reduction to services and supplies, or in taking that reduction in any place that they choose. But I think that there is a critical consistency issue here in treating all of these budgets the same. Is there any other discussion about this that anybody would like to put on the record? Is there any objection to doing this? Chair would accept a motion to reduce the agency expenditures by a total of $11,370,090 as outlined in the table below in Mr. Bender's memo of May 27, 2003, to eliminate funds in the governor's balanced budget to offset the impact of inflation on service and supply costs.
So moved.
Representative Smith has made the motion. Is there discussion on the motion?
Well, Madam Chair, I'll support this, understanding that we have not discussed and will not discuss this committee revenue, and that some of these packages may be bought back at a later time. And but I'm going to support the role we're playing here, because we don't know where we end up as far as that.
Thank you. I much appreciate that. Is there any other discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion?
No objection, Madam Chair. I was just asking Steve if in the governor's revised budget we're looking at the same inflation allowance.
I don't believe so. Mr. McGee, do you have a comment on that?
Thank you. For the record, Bill McGee from the Department of Administrative Services. Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, we do have reductions. We haven't specified inflation as being a reduction for the governor's revised budget.
I'm sorry.
There are reductions in the governor's revised budget. We have not identified inflation as one of those. We've specified them in different ways.
All right. Thank you.
There's a motion on the table. I'll ask once again if there's objection to the motion. Hearing no objection, the motion is carried. Mr. Bender.
Number five, excuse me, on page three, the vacancy savings adjustment. As you know, the co-chairs have directed Ways and Means subcommittees to review vacant positions in all agency budgets and to eliminate any positions and their associated funding if they are not needed in the 2003-05 biennium. This particular, I'd like to propose a method that LFO is recommending to deal with vacancy savings for the Department of Higher Education budget. It is not possible to go through the type of exercise that subcommittees are doing with other state agencies in order to determine what the vacancy savings adjustments are in this budget. And the reason why it's not possible is, unlike for other state agencies, the budget does not fund positions per se. For other state agencies, there are specific positions which are identified. There are specific compensation rates for those positions which are identified. And the budget provides funds to cover those costs. And when you add them up, that's how you get that part of the budget. Then you add services and supplies, et cetera. But that is not how higher ed is budgeted. The state, when you budget higher ed, you are not funding specific identified positions.
Instead, you are providing support to them in the form of general fund. You are allowing them to use other funds to hire people, essentially, to provide the services that they are asked to provide. Under law, the Department of Higher Education is autonomous in establishing its own positions. It is not the Department of Administrative Services or the legislature that establishes positions for higher ed. They have authority to establish positions, to eliminate positions, and they have the authority to set compensation rates. So they are doing that at their end, and at your end, you're providing funding to them. And they combine to make sure, you know, that they don't establish or try to fund more positions than they have funding for. What we are asking in light of this is that the subcommittee do the following. We are asking that you look at the amount of vacancy savings that the Ways and Means Committee is achieving in other state agency budgets as a proportion of their compensation costs, and that you then apply an equal percentage reduction to the personal service costs for this agency. Those numbers we do not know yet, because we need to go through, and Ways and Means needs to go through, perhaps not every state agency, but at least a number of the larger ones, to find out how much money is actually being saved in other state agency budgets. And then we would recommend applying that same proportion to higher education to get around the fact that we don't have, or we can't look at a specific position and say it's vacant, do you need to fund this or not? Because there isn't particular funding for that position. I don't know if what I'm saying is clear or not. Please ask for clarification if I'm not making sense.
Senator Messley.
I think it's clear, Madam Chair, the information that Mr. Bender's giving us. I just feel very uneasy without knowing or having on the record any kind of an impact. And I hope at some point when we do come up with that number, there will be an opportunity before we vote know what that impact is going to mean to the system.
There would be. We would have to come back and give you dollar amounts. We also are recommending this budget note language number 5, just that you approve the structure of the budget note language with the dollars to be added in, and perhaps the department would want to comment even at this point before the numbers are available. But the budget note we would ask you to approve would say that the budget is reduced by so many dollars general fund, so many dollars other funds, and by so many dollars non-limited other funds in application of a vacancy experience factor on personal service costs, excluding costs for positions funded by non-limited gifts, grants, and contracts. That means is we're recommending that those positions that are being funded by grant activities, federal research activities, et cetera, we don't see anything to be gained by reducing the amount that you're expecting the agency to spend on that, because those are being supported through a competitive process of obtaining federal research grants. But other expenditures would be reduced, and this vacancy experience factor would reflect the average rate of savings the committee approved in other state agency budgets as a result of review of vacant positions. The department is directed in the execution of this budget to avoid filling vacant positions wherever plausible.
So again, committee members, a discussion here of whether this is a realistic process to use to try to get a handle on a way to look at vacancies, and just an approval of the structure of the budget note, not an approval of the, we have no content yet, so just an approval here, more or less of a process, or a discussion on a process. Senator Gordon.
I really need to hear something from the department on this. I have reservations that are just based on needing more information, and also if we're being asked to equate rate of savings of positions in the Department of Human Services versus positions in the Department of Higher Education, well, again, I just have reservations about the approach and assumptions. Let's hear from the department.
Okay. And also, Representative March, could I have you bring your issues forward, and then we'll have the department come forward and comment?
Yeah, I'm very I echo the concerns. We set up the Oregon Oregon University system to be independent and to sort of meet the need out there, and to sort of kind of hamstring them with this budget note. I'm very uncomfortable with it.
Mr. Anders.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I think a vacancy savings is realistic for one agency versus another as a concept. I guess I'm finding difficulty in finding vacancy savings and finding a number. Looking at the last couple of years, knowing that everybody has been holding positions vacant and trying to find a meaningful factor. But beyond that, looking specifically at OUS, and Mr. Bender and I have had a little discussion on this, is that we have a fairly significant number of faculty. And these are not positions that turn over like a classified staff or a budget analyst or something. And what we need to do and what we're trying to do is figure out how we can differentiate what that factor may be for that set of people within the system versus what I think would be others that are probably more comparable to those in state agencies, our other classified and unclassified positions. But I think from our standpoint, the number would be lower. I think just by the definition of the faculty and the kind of turnover rates that we've got there. That's something we need to try to work on ourselves. I think Senator Gordley's view of the difference is accurate. We need to provide some additional information that could help confirm that as you create the information at the with the other state agencies. And like to do that if given the opportunity.
To the committee members, please bear in mind that vacancy adjustments are a major piece of what the co-chairs have asked us to do in every budget, and that one of the things that we're trying to do here, which may or may not apply to this budget, is a process of truthing up budgets so that the money that is actually applied to vacant positions and is going other places ends up being applied to where it actually is applied. And with that in mind, I would very much appreciate fast and robust and cut to the chase discussion here so that we can come to a reasonable way to look at this. And again, to have the committee members be given the information that we need so that the process makes sense to us. And given that you do have a system that has almost 12,000 people involved in it, that we expect that there is going to be a significant number of vacant positions in that system.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, Madam Chair, I would agree with that very much. It's extremely hard what we're trying to do statewide in balancing these budgets. And the Department of Higher Education, on one hand, is no different than in the other, although I think that you assume that you're very special, and a lot of people think you're very special, and we need to just continue along these lines as other departments are, I think, and we need a number as soon as possible.
Madam Chair, I think we're special to a lot of people, and we are special in certain ways, like every state agency is to its constituents. I think in our particular case, the only argument that I would make is that the faculty, as a group and an employee, is not typical of the rest of the state, and I don't think should be judged as such. So I'm only asking to, we could probably by tomorrow give you some information that would indicate in some fashion. I'm not going to say that it will have some absolute statistical significance, but I think it will give us a sense of how that vacancy rate may be different than, say, our other employees.
Comments, Mr. Bender?
I'll be happy to view any information that the department can provide. I do want to note that because higher ed's funding of compensation is different from other state agencies. We do have a history of doing things in a similar manner to the way this budget note is suggesting. For example, when we roll up the cost of compensation increases in a budget, we have in the past, because they set their own compensation levels, we have in the past said, well, we will only supply funding for rates of increase equal to the average rates of increase for other state agency budgets. So this is not entirely breaking new ground by looking at other state agency budget averages and applying them to this budget, but of course it had never been done with this particular exercise before.
Representative Bates.
Madam Chair, I would make the point that technical corrections 4, 5, and 6 are all very similar, and that you're trying to apply general principles to the budget. The budget we don't have complete control over, we expect these people to deal with, and I expect they will deal with it successfully. And so I kind of see this as a question of you leave the budget where it's at, or you give them more revenue, and they apply that as we've asked them to. The key part of 5 for me is the very last sentence of the budget note. It says avoid filling vacant positions wherever possible. I'm not saying you can't fill vacant positions. It's a direction to go, and one you're probably already following.
Absolutely.
And that kind of a budget note gives them some direction, but we are not trying to micromanage OUS because we can't. We haven't got time to, but we have to have some direction for it. Since we are a big part of your budget, I think we have a right to say that to you. I think that's what you're trying to say.
I think you said it very well, Representative Bates, that the expectation here is that the Oregon University system will put the same kind of effort into trying to decrease their vacant positions that we're asking every other agency to go through. And really what this is a continuation of the expectations that are being laid on every other state budget.
Mm-hmm. That emphasis helps. Thank you.
Okay. What I'll do then is defer taking action on the budget note until LFO has had an opportunity to speak to the OUS system to see if this is going to work for them. But I would again just reiterate to the members of the committee that this is an attempt based on what has been done in the past to approach this in an even-handed and equitable way. So barring a better solution to this that has a viable impact, I will be asking people to think very seriously about accepting this budget mm-hmm. note or conceptually approving the structure of it. And with that, I would assume, Mr. Bender, that we'll take up where we left off and, if possible, have a discussion about the extension service and continue this discussion on this proposal for a budget note.
Yes, gotcha.
And having no further business before the committee, this work session is closed and this hearing is adjourned, and we'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
That additional information.